love how we have two people across the pond schooling San Diego people.
Yeah, that's our claim to
Marcos.
fame. That's Poway
No.
kids.
Absolutely.
We have no idea. Everyone's this is gonna come out and be like, shame on
I know,
you.
right?
Oh man.
You
I
guys.
almost feel like we don't need to do an intro to the podcast because we can just go straight into that. But
Yeah, right.
yeah, cool. So if this is the start, if we don't decide to change the edits, welcome to the Tracks That Made Us. I
Woo.
think this is episode number five, and we're joined by an amazing band who have collaborated with us on a cover of Slither by Velvet Revolver, who famously Drew has got some interesting opinions.
Oh, come on,
So,
mate.
guys,
Wait.
introduce yourself.
All right, ladies first.
Hello, I am Jules Welpton. I am hashtag that blonde bassist, even though I'm looking a little COVID Rudy today. I play bass and I sing backups in Fairplay.
My name's Will. I'm the guitar player and also backup vocals in Fairplay.
Awesome.
Welcome.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Roz, you gotta put like a
Oh,
pew,
yeah,
pew, pew, pew.
yeah.
Get some fireworks going.
Exactly.
So yeah, so I'm trying to think, like, we obviously did we come together from maybe a response to that first Tracks That Made Us where we were
So
possibly dipping
what
super
it was
groups?
I think what it was is your guys's clip of of your single that's going to come out, or I Want to Know,
Oh, that's the other one.
came up. Yeah, so that came up on the Fairplay feed, and I'm just like, dude, these guys are sick. These guys are awesome. So I followed you guys, and I'm like, okay, these guys are like the real deal. And I think we kind of like exchanged a message back and forth, and then you approached us asking you to want to do it. It was still an idea then. The first episode hasn't come out yet.
Oh, yeah, I think yeah,
Yeah.
that's cool. So yeah, so we ended up, obviously we were talking about like our love of those bands. Actually, do you know what it was? We were looking like, I think we kind of both came across each other, and I think originally when we started talking to each other, we were thinking possibly about doing a Deftones cover. But I know
Yes,
you guys had
actually, that's right.
you guys were working on one already, and I think that's maybe how we got talking. We were talking about the Deftones.
Right, I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
We need
who
to
are an
talk
awesome
about
band.
Deftones more. That's a whole other episode, but we should talk about the
Yeah,
how great the
Tiffany was,
Deftones are.
yeah. Tiffany is our like our lead singer right now, is a huge Deftones fan. In fact, that's how we discovered her. She sent me a video of her singing Beauty School
No
acoustically,
way.
and we were like, whoa,
Mm-hmm.
she is amazing. She had a vibe, like it's like I gave me chills. So I'm like, okay, yes. I'm just like, yes. When can you come in?
Man, the Deftones. I
Yeah.
mean, I've always
White
there was
Pony
always
for
that
me.
tag of Chino being the new Metal Morrissey, but he's so
Okay.
much more than that. But
Oh,
there are so many similarities.
Totally.
Amazing lyricist as well. Like,
Yeah, the riffs too. It's just like, admittedly, I did not listen to too much Deftones before I met Tiffany, but like as soon as she came in the band, I like dove head first into it. I'm just like, whoa. Some of these riffs are
honestly, their
crazy.
drummer, Abe, he's like
True.
Yeah.
that rhythm section.
Amazing.
They're great. They're all amazing.
Yeah.
Like they're all like it's I do like the fact it's like heavy riffs, but it's just the sonic kind of airiness about
And it's
it.
also
You
melodic
know.
too.
Yeah, that's what I
Yeah,
mean. It's like that type of but then he can just when he goes for it, it's just like, yeah, like
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
the scream versus the airiness is it's beautiful. It's beautifully like I don't know what it is, but and I like whatever the effects they use on his vocals in the studio. It might just be gained up or distorted or whatever, you know. We've been
Probably a
trying to
little
do
bit of
that.
saturation.
I've been trying to do that a bit on our record, just like give it some not too plain Jane, you know, just
Right.
have moments of this and that, and you know, in like I Want to Know and stuff. There's distortion vocals, and I
Right.
think it's really important, all that stuff. I love all that stuff. It's
Yeah, it gives it a little bit of warmth and
yeah.
a little bit of that extra juice.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. My claim to fame, if you look closely enough, there is a Deftones video for a track I think called Mine, which featured Serj Tankian, although he wasn't in the video, and I'm in the background of some of the party
No
shots.
way.
Yeah,
Nice.
because I was out with an old band trying to get a deal, and we ended up with friends of friends who were friends of the Deftones. They're like, hey,
Oh,
do you want to come to a Deftones video shoot? There's free catering. It's like, yeah, we're there.
Yeah.
It's like you said yes before you heard free catering. You're just like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was the cherry on the top. Yeah.
I've been invited to a Kiss. Like, when Kiss released their book, the Monster book, I ended up in the party but they had all left by that point. It was right at the end, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I missed Kiss and Doc McGee, but I was chatting to one of the road crew that were there. You're like, oh, you just missed it. Okay. I was like, no.
He's like, no.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So we've obviously been going back and forth and like with the wonders of modern technology.
Oh yeah, dude.
Absolutely.
Made the most of a pretty terrible situation. Mm-hmm. But I guess the positive thing that we can take, I think, as musicians, and I think as rock musicians in general, is we've kind of been forced to use the technology around to kind of keep going and, you know, communicating with you guys and working on a cover together of such a great song like Slither has just been really, really awesome. And it's just, you know, I kind of find, you know, writing music, even just performing music, is such like an intimate thing, and you tend to kind of do it with like people that you have these kind of close relationships with. But I think it's been really, really amazing to you know, we've never all been in the same room together, but we've actually created like some art, you know, which is really, really awesome. And I think, you know, it's almost like you feel like you have that connection. Before we started talking, I was talking about, like, I feel like I've spent a lot of time with you guys because I've been editing the video. So, like, I kind of see your faces and, like, I'm seeing you rocking out. And I'm like, oh, man, you know, we've captured the sound great. We've got great performances. So it's been a really exciting venture for us to embark on.
No, I 100% agree. It's just, like, right before the pandemic, it's just, like, I think we were just so focused on, like, gigging as much as we could and just trying to get ourselves out there. And, you know, we didn't really think about video too much until the pandemic. And it's like that kind of like you said, it forces us to kind of re-look at things differently. It's like, what can we do ourselves?
100%. Yeah. That's the thing. It does make you reassess everything. Like now, you know, in a positive way, it's just like, how do you get your music out there? If you can't gig, you can't do anything.
Exactly.
Like, how do you promote yourself? And, you know, the fact that we can have a conversation and connect musically to people across the pond, and that you wouldn't have been able to do like 20 years ago without a record label or something, or just, I don't know, it just sort of seems so far away. But now we can connect with these bands, and I think with our type of music, I said to Rod about it, I said, you know, America, like, you want to be, you know, just tapping up around, you know, we've got a following in Brazil.
That's awesome.
Hey,
our first drummer was Brazilian.
Bass player was
cool. Hi, Eddie.
Yeah, but he had to move back to Brazil, so you know.
Our OG drummer had to move to Australia, actually, of all places.
Oh wow!
All right, fair enough.
Brazil's got a huge rock scene. They go nuts. I mean, rock in Rio.
Of course.
And even British acts that were sort of big back in the day, like maybe in the 80s or 90s, that aren't big over here anymore, just still tour over in South America. They've just got these kind of followings where...
It's funny how that plays out, huh? It's like fans that aren't big in their home countries, they go somewhere else and they're huge.
It's like, it's like Bush, I always thought was funny, as an English band. Like, were they Big Rod in the UK?
I mean, if you weren't into rock music, you would have no idea who they were. And I remember, like, Gavin Rossdale used to say, like, I can just go out, no one knows who I am. But if I go to LA, I can't walk in the streets.
Oh, man.
Because he's also married to Gwen Stefani. Yeah. So, there's a sad story.
And then the rock station here plays Bush, like, constantly on repeat.
Yeah, I guess it was like Nirvana, I guess, but they were like the British kind of equivalent, but they were huge in the States, and I didn't realize. And bands, you know, from the UK point of view, it was such a small place. To break America is like, that's like the goal, you know, like every band that kind of breaks the UK first, say Lost Prophets or, you know, those types of bands. Oh, sorry, can we say that? But, sorry, yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, everyone kind of starts off in the UK, and you've got to break the UK before you're allowed to break America. But I think nowadays, with like this type of technology, you know, we can do this. We can just go straight to the source and just not. I'd personally rather break America before even the. I don't really mind not breaking the UK as much. I'd rather break America because you probably make more of a living because it's a bigger country to be able to tour and work around, you know, and things like that.
Definitely a lot more resources here.
Certainly. Yeah. And you've got more a variety of rock. Your radio stations are.
There's definitely a lot more broad rock genres out here.
Yeah, and it's split quite well, and yeah, it's good.
It's funny though when we talk about, like, you know, we talk about Brazil, and it's like we're noticing, and then this is the other thing about the technology, like really delving into, you know, the detail, looking at your analytics and going, well, this is who's listening to you. And Guru and I were talking about, like I said, we just have this huge kind of number of people in specifically in Sao Paulo for some reason. You know, I mean, at the time of going out, I think we've got about 1600 followers. 400 are in Sao Paulo.
Wow.
And that's I'm thinking, really cool. And the thing is, I'm thinking like this. I'm thinking, well, you could take that data and you might be able to find a booker in Brazil who would book you a gig, you know? And this is a thing, like, in Britain, I think Britain is one of the worst places for rock bands in terms of like how our live music scene is. Mm-hmm. Like, most promoters don't pay. Like, unless you're like a professional, you know, record label band, there are pretty much no paid gigs because we've kind of lost a lot of our kind of live music kind of heritage that maybe in the days of, you know, the Beatles and the Stones that Britain was really famous for. And I think, you know, from my experiences of like being in the States, you're not quite as far gone as we are. There still definitely is this big community of people wanting to hear live music and playing and all of that stuff. And you know, I feel like you kind of have that a little bit more in Brazil. Like I heard this crazy stat where I think it was like 40% of the music on the radio is guitar based. Whereas I think in the UK, it's less than 2%.
That's ridiculous.
So of course, but then this is the whole concept. Like, if you know that there are going to be people there, if you know you've got four hundred fans there, well, if you could book a show and you charge, you know, $10 a ticket, that's $4,000 someone's doing. Now
that's
in England,
a small theater right there.
Absolutely, but in England, you play somewhere, and we might go to a gig, and it probably will cost us £250-300 to do that gig, just to go and do it. If we get paid £50, we'd be happy. So every gig we do as a band, like at our level, we're going to be losing money. So it just makes you think, well, we could do a week in Brazil, maybe play 3 or 4 shows and potentially get paid. And it would probably cost us the same amount of money. So Brazil, here we come.
Right.
Maybe we stop at San Diego.
But
Dude, let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to talk.
I want to stem back a little bit towards your comment on the technology thing. I would actually argue it's not technology, it's the social media.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And how you push it and what ad revenue you might be spending on. Yeah. A lot of that, I mean, you can, you know, once this comes out, you can always, you know, center in on Brazil if you want to follow that market, and maybe you can get even more. And then just send it to that promoter or whoever.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's all online. I mean, everything is online. It's 100%.
Like, but you almost don't even need the best technology. I guess that's my point. You just need to know how to utilize social media. Yeah.
It's a tool.
Yeah. You know? It's crazy.
It's an amazing tool. Like, whereas before you would have had to have paid someone to get into a magazine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think pre-internet days and all this kind of stuff, you had to like, How did you read about music? It was from, like, we've got a magazine over here called Kerrang. And that was a weekly issue, which has now turned into a monthly issue. And then we had a magazine called NME, which is is that still exist, Rod? NME?
I think it's online only. But, like, we used to have Melody Maker. Like, when we were teenagers, Melody Maker was really big. And they went out of business in the early 2000s. It was crazy. Yeah, like, there used to be so many music magazines, and then that's kind of gone. Right. But one of the things I think
it's all online.
One thing I think is really interesting is I think like the whole like moving to online and the whole streaming thing in the mid 2000s. Right. I think the first phase of that was there was like a wave of music that kind of came. Bands like the Arctic Monkeys, bands like, I don't know if you guys know a band called Enter Shikari, but they did really well off of MySpace. Like, they did fantastically well. Yeah. And they had a sound that people said that could never be on the radio. But they...
It's the MySpace sound.
Yeah, it's the MySpace sound. But it resonated with people. And I think in the UK, I think their album got to like number 3 or number 4 in the charts. They sold like over 100,000 copies in UK, which is just huge. You know, so it just showed there was an appetite. But I think what's kind of happened is, like, now, like you say, the social media has kind of meant that everyone can be in a band and everyone can do this. But the now, the kind of thing that sets you aside is if you know, like you said, how to
use a proper
technology, how to... Yeah. I was saying, I was actually talking about, Drew, your guitar playing when I talk about... and Will, I mean, I've seen you play as well. It's the same. Like, I don't understand how your fingers can move that fast and you still control them. To me, it's like when Neo is looking at the Matrix and he finally gets it. I'm sure that's kind of how you guys see guitars. But I'm sure
at some point that happens.
But I think with analytics now,
at some point we're just like all right, we figured it out.
Yeah, that's how we do it.
Yeah, but like with
I just picked a red pill. It's fine.
Yeah, but with the analytics, I think it's like that. It's like you once you learn how to read it and you know what to do, it's like it gives that power back to the artist. I think there's just this constant back and forth between the industry and the artist, and the industry and the artist. And I think COVID, as awful as it was, has kind of really forced a lot of people to kind of learn that side of things. And I think hopefully. We'll see some of the benefits of those things over the coming months, coming years.
Absolutely.
No, I 1000% agree. Just like with this year alone, I just started like looking at our analytics for Fairplay. I'm just like, oh, okay, I see. And then that's how I target what posts to make and how to like use different hashtags and what time to post and whatnot and like captions and all this. It's like just with all the analytics provided to us, it was like we have the tools. We just got to learn how to use it.
It's a game. It's a game. I think Rod's trying to play a game to how to break the algorithm.
Like,
how can I break the algorithm? And I'm like, it's exactly what it is. It's just a game to try and like, you know, it's like a Rubik's cube.
And they change every single month.
That's been a challenge on itself trying to keep up with it.
I mean, one of the things, like, I know. I love to play devil's advocate, but one of the things like Drew and I were talking about the other day is it's like the industry wants bands now that are a small version of the finished package, you know? Like, it's not enough just to have great songs and to be able to perform. It's also about knowing how to master the social media and bits and pieces. And it's like there doesn't seem to be, or at least in the UK and from my understanding, there doesn't seem to be that old, the A&R who's just out and maybe he or she is looking for that busker that just has the amazing voice. And it's like, I can turn you into a star because you are just music, you know? And I wonder, like, what are we missing? Like, are we missing something in that regard? Are we missing that kind of, you know, that kind of wild person who just has this thing about them, but they're just not interested in the business side?
Yeah. I could see that. I mean, we could try and take a look at Dirty Honey, almost. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them.
No.
So they're a band out of Los Angeles. They're unsigned, and they just hit the charts number one consistently here in the States.
Have you guys, here's a better, no offense, but here's a better example. Greta Van Fleet. So when I was, I actually did a tour with a musician in Michigan about, I don't know, 4 years ago. And we were going through and it wasn't 4 years ago. It was like 5. Oh my God. Anywho, we were going through and this little dive bar in Frankenmuth, Michigan was, they had a band named Greta Van Fleet. And I'm all like, oh, that's cool. They're kids, you know, la la la. I never went, didn't do any of that. And then literally like a year or two, their social media, you know, the YouTube, oh my gosh, it's Led Zeppelin and now they're up for Grammys and here's their second album, and all of a sudden that band went from here to, you know, and that really stems from I don't even think they had a label like when they were, when I was in Michigan and like walked by them. I think what happened is, you know, like we're talking about with social media and the fact that the business really isn't dependent on that record label marketing anymore. It's all DIY.
Yeah.
So if you can, you know, really take a band and say, okay, this is what we need to do to get, you know, a Grammy, let's just say it as an example, you know, we've got to push this product this way without the help and relying on this thing, but we might be able to spend a little bit on like promotion, you know, whereas that would have been a label, you know, if you signed, that would have been a label feature basically. And, you know, and if you can sign a label with booking help, do it, you know, a lot of labels might not offer that now, but some do. You know, I have some friends that are lucky enough who have that. So it's just a, you know, as the industry changes, it seems to be in favor of this DIY. So
absolutely. You know.
I have a question for you guys, and just to bring the conversation. Now, using the example as Greta Van Fleet, do you think it's because we're as rock fans, do you think they're hungry for that old school sound in this modern day?
I hope so.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. The only problem I have with that, all that kind of stuff. Here we go, another one of my.
Oh,
God.
I
was in a band, that was kind of billed as the next Led Zeppelin, and all these types of terms that get thrown around. Like,
what was the name of that band, Drew?
Doesn't matter, but
I'll flash it up on the screen.
Flash it up on the screen. But I was in a. I was in this band for a little bit, and they were kind of getting some motion and stuff. We did some cool things. But the problem is, when you start kind of going, they're the next Led Zeppelin, they're the next this, you're automatically trying to get something from the past that isn't... It's done. Like, it's... Yeah. That's my only thing. It's like, I think what people want maybe is just rock music. I don't think it's Led Zeppelin. I think that's just a term... that gets thrown out, like, around. I don't really want to see Deep Purple again. Like, in the 70s, maybe. That was a great time. It's a bit like Bon Jovi or something. Like, I love Bon Jovi, but I love Bon Jovi in 1987. You know, I don't really like what it represents now, you know.
Right.
You know, the 80s, is like, I do a, there's a show, a theatre show called Rock of Ages. And I'm the UK, UK.
So I love that show. Actually.
I'm the guitarist in it. I do the guitar in the tours, in the UK tour, and it's great. And it's like a mimic of the 80s and LA.
Yeah.
And
like, it's funny.
It's really cool. But I don't know. Do people really want to go back to 1985 and go to the LA Strip? And
you know, I do, right?
Like,
for that moment, you know,
everyone looks back with rose tinted eyes,
yeah.
And there was a lot of, as much as there was some great stuff in the 80s, man, there was a lot of shit as well. Like, there was a lot of shit, but there was some great stuff as well. But
what I don't want is like five bands trying to sound like Rat.
Yeah.
This is the thing. Like,
or like 10 bands sound trying to sound like Whitesnake.
But in the UK, we've got this radio station, which I won't say, because they're brilliant. They're actually, sorry, I will say, because they are brilliant. They're really supportive of us. And they're called Planet Rock. And they're like the only thing out there, really, that is really supportive of rock music. But what I have a problem with is of all these like new bands coming up, that they're trying to sound like a certain era.
Mm-hmm.
But they certainly don't step up to the plate of what that era was, you know. It's all right kind of going Greta Van Fleet, the next Led Zeppelin, but are they? Like, they're great. They are great. They're a great band, but mimicking is, it gets to a point where you're like you said, do you really, like, I love Rat. Rat are great, but do I want to see a band coming around now, like, that sound like Rat, like, there's a lot that goes on in Sweden.
It's weird because, like, I personally wouldn't, but like, maybe fans are. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I think we're all trying to live, and especially like, we're the generation that used to love that have money to buy that music, so they're a lot more kind of, oh, that's why nostalgia's back again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, like, we talk about Blink-182 like they're a new band. They're not, like, they're just, that's 20 years ago, really, isn't it, Rod?
And they're different now. I mean, they're completely not the Blink
Blink 182 are classic rock. I hate to say it.
Oh, no, they are. They are. They're on the classic rock playlist.
I know. I heard Green Day on classic rock radio. I'm just what is happening?
we were talking about this on our group chat today. Yeah. And I was just talking about getting old. Because we kind of are a bit dad rock. But the thing that was the thing that's crazy is when I was a teenager, I went to see the 25th anniversary show of Nevermind the Bollocks by the Sex Pistols. Okay. I think that was 2002. Right.
Wow.
And I was, you know, I went because I was into punk music and it was the Sex Pistols, but I was like, they're a bit old. And all these people who are watching it, they're all a bit old. And then it struck me the other day. I was like, I wanted to go to the Green Day 25 Years of Dookie thing. So that's exactly the same. Like, that's an album that I recall now. And I wouldn't think that I'm old listening to Dookie. And I'm like, wow, the times have changed. Like, I think the big difference, probably the one thing that I would say is because the Sex Pistols were, you know, here and gone in a very, very short period of time, I think that was slightly different. I think when you are, you know, a Green Day, a Smashing Pumpkins, a Pearl Jam, and you have actually consistently put out music, 25 years, although it is a long time, doesn't feel quite as detached because they're not
playing
that one album. You know, you're paying, if Pearl Jam play, they play 25 years of unbelievable music, you know, and you can feel the eras. Go through. And even like a band like the Smashing Pumpkins, like I saw an interview with Billy Corgan and he's talking now about when we go out and tour, what we're going to do is we're going to tour eras because we understand that certain fans are wedded to certain eras. So we'll do like a Melancholy Siamese Dream era tour. We'll do a Machina era tour. We'll do a Gish tour and let people know what those, you know, what those things are. So there isn't a disappointment. You know, if we're doing new material, we'll let them know. And I think that's quite a clever way of doing things. I am sensitive of the fact that we have just like steamrolled through and just talked. And we haven't even got to the track, Slither. We haven't talked.
Right, let's talk about Slither.
Velvet Revolver.
This is the problem. This is what happens every time. So let's
do that. I'm cool with it, man. So yeah, Slither, it's an interesting track because like everything I know, Slash is the biggest reason why I play guitar. It's like I learned everything I know about guitar from Slash, and then I know when I do play bass on the rare occasion, everything I learned about bass is from Duff. So those two are like my biggest heroes. Mm. And then Velvet Revolver was interesting because I loved Contraband, but I did not like the second album.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It was not very good.
It was a flop. Yeah.
It was rushed.
Yeah, that too. And then I was talking to Jules last night. I just dove into like the history of like the rise of Velvet Revolver, that VH1 documentary.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my god, that was it started out rough.
Yeah, Scott Williams was a bit of a problem at the time.
Scott is there was a really
good hero. He's just an absolute hero.
There's a great quote about, you know, they're comparing Scott and Axel. And they're saying, look,
that's what I was thinking too, because Matt Sorum had a problem with Axl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they said, do you know what the difference was? They are both phenomenal lyricists, phenomenal singers. The difference is that Axl could go on a 3-day bender, turn up with 2 minutes to go, could barely walk, but when he gets on stage, he delivers.
Primal.
You know what I mean? Whereas Weiland, you know what I mean? He went beyond what he could handle. And I mean, Scott Weiland is literally like my hero. And I think one of the things that just pains me to this day is shortly before he died, I don't know if you saw, there was the video of him and his band playing Vaseline. And
it's heartbreaking, to be honest.
Yeah. And you think, and I remember, I believe it's like there was 3 years between when, I think it was about three or four years between him getting back with the Stone Temple Pilots, and they did I think it was like for Amex or something like that. They did this really cool gig, even if it was for some corporate credit card bullshit. But it was an amazing show that they played, and Scott was back. And then you literally saw this and you thought, that must have been 20 years ago. And you just think, God, like, how would you do that to your body? You know what I mean? Like, he just wasn't himself anymore. And I just always thought,
no.
And I always thought he would get it back together and he'd prove everyone wrong and he would just have this swan song. And might be just because I've got a newborn kid, but I'm almost welling up thinking about it because I just think it's so sad. You know,
it is sad.
It is
very sad. You know, but you learn
that your heroes are human beings as well, you know?
Yeah,
Man, I was reading up about the Lane stuff today for some reason.
That's right. Yeah, because the anniversary of his passing was this week, wasn't it?
Technically same day as Kurt Cobain, but I'm not sure how they calculate that.
Cause... 2 weeks, wasn't it? They found him dead in his condo. Yeah. You just think, what a waste. What a complete waste of talent and waste of... But a lot of those Seattle bands, like that era, that was a very drug-fueled era, you know, and it's not really, you don't really sit in the industries. I mean, it is there, but certainly not in the way. It's not romanticized. It's not like, oh, this is cool, do drugs, kids. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, they are the poster boys of like, don't do drugs because that's what happens, you know.
It's funny you say that, Drew, because like, when I was working at my old job, you know, I was the only one of the whole crew of guys I would listen to like this kind of music. Yeah. And they would always romanticize like the, oh, you're a rock guy. You're always into like drugs and alcohol and like putting yourself to the limit. And I'm like, actually, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm like, if you've seen what happened to like all of my heroes, like, why would I want to put myself in that situation?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to have a long lasting career like that. And then
one of the sad things about grunge is, I mean, it was such a great moment in time, but you wonder like, why did grunge kind of fall away a little bit? And it's like, because they all OD'd, they all died. Yeah, yeah.
They couldn't get their shit together in the studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like for like the next albums, like you see the gaps between the albums because they're all just fucks and they just can't, they can't get it together. There's no, you can't be productive. You can't be a productive junkie. It's not, you know, just not how it works.
I 1,000% agree on that.
It's like what's the Stone Temple Pilots record, the one I love, it's the anniversary this year, Tiny Music. But that album, I mean, like, you listen to his voice, you're like, Christ, it's like there's no strength in his voice, just like it's just whittled away. Mm-hmm. And they toured the amp for 4 weeks and he was sent to jail. It was like, right, okay. In some ways, it glorifies it because it makes the band bigger and it was the day of the album sales. So they would have made all their money off of... If that was today, there's a point with Stone Temple Pilots, right? I worked it out. They didn't play a gig for about 3 years. It's like from the back end of Tiny Music to about the middle of Number Four, because they ended up having to not tour Number Four either for ages because he went to jail again. And it was like... it was like there was just no touring like for ages, but because there was album sales and stuff, you know, you could get them through. But in today's world, it'd be like, dude, we've got a tour, like we've got to make a living, like, you know.
Exactly.
It's like, you know,
I also think like the fans don't help either, because like they almost enable this in a way, like they romanticize this. And like, just thinking about going back to Weiland, I was watching like a video of like his passing and like how he would show up late and like just like show up knocked out on stage and not out during a song. And it's almost like the fans, I forget who was saying this, but like the fans were almost enabling this.
Yeah.
Like they were like, yeah, he's a rock star. And like, what do you expect him to do? I'm like, I would like my heroes to not be fucked up. Thank you.
Yeah. So have a good career and keep writing music.
You know? Like, I'm paid money to come see him rock out and do his thing, not out during a song.
And people don't realize as well, I also saw, like, going back to Revolver and stuff, you know, I think I remember seeing it with Slash just being like, it's like, look, we tried. Like, you know, we put them through rehabs and what's that in VH1 where they, like, Duff takes them up to the mountains and does all the crying.
He takes them to his old master, actually.
I think Duff is a great example of someone who was truly messed up and got through the other end.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. I think he's like, if you're going to get a poster boy of like, it's going to be all right, you can get through it. It's Duff. Like, big time. Like, he's been sober since 90.
Yeah, I was rereading both of his books over the past few days. And just like, the dude, like, towards the end of User Illusions was like, his skin was cracked because he was so dehydrated. that he had to play bass with gloves on.
Yeah.
Ew. Yeah, it was that bad. His liver exploded at some point.
It was pancreas, wasn't it?
Pancreas
burst because he drank too much. So, and that was the end, I think, for him. He was like, that's it.
And it also like points, and the big reason for this too is like he had major anxiety issues.
Yeah.
Like this is like all this stuff, if anything, it shouldn't be romanticized. It should show like, you know, these guys are human.
Yeah.
They got their problems.
Slash had a bit of a problem. He was a heroin addict, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing they all kind of came through it, apart from Steven Adler, I think, in Guns N' Roses. But yeah. I thought when they did Velvet Revolver that they were just a bit more grown up. They were like adults by that point. Yeah. So they were like almost...
They were hungry too. Like they wanted to do something together.
Do you guys think that the experience with Velvet Revolver actually contributed to, you know, the kind of classic Guns N' Roses lineup getting back together? That bad experience with Weiland, you know, made them kind of reassess and go, yeah, let's do it.
What's that?
What?
The old Bunsen burner.
Speaking of burned, I mean, Matt Sorum got burned by both the Cult and Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
They didn't ask him to come back.
Actually, I saw Matt Sorum with the Cult in about 2001.
Jules, didn't we go see Guns N' Roses at Qualcomm?
Yep. That was 2016.
Opened. Yeah, 2016. The Cult opened and Guns N' Roses opened. Matt Sorum was nowhere to be found.
Yep, and I saw the Cult 2015, and yeah, he wasn't there.
No. Because he left the Cult to join Guns N' Roses.
Mm-hmm.
And a British drummer from the UK called Michael Lee joined the Cult.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was in a band called Little Angels, which were huge and huge.
Yeah, big band.
But Velvet Revolver is a funny one. So I've got like, you probably think of Rob's just been like...
That's the power of editing, dude. I literally...
I was like, literally, you made me look like a twat, like all the time.
I talked probably for 15 minutes, but I managed to, with the power of editing, make it look like I'm Silent Rod and Drew is just...
All I was saying was that, you know, how I feel about supergroups, because there was a point, wasn't there, that around that time, I think when Velvet Revolver came out, Audioslave came out, it was like supergroup central, like how many supergroups can we have? And, you know, Rockstar Supernova, we were talking, me and Rod were
talking. Oh, that's right. That was a TV show.
Watched that TV show.
Yeah, and it was like,
put time away, I'm just like, I'm going to watch this.
And Gilby Clark was in there too.
Gilby Clark was in it. Yeah, exactly. And it was Tommy Lee, and it was like, it was great, but it was just like, I don't know. Like, I always talk about, I always, you know, do this. The band is the sum of all parts. And just because it's two great bands joining one band doesn't mean it's going to make a great band, you know?
True. This is true.
You know, and this is go back to Velvet Revolver in the sense where I do like the first album. I think the first album was really good. I thought Sliver, when it first came out, I preferred that to the Audioslave thing when it first came out. I much prefer Velvet Revolver, but maybe because it's Weiland and I like his voice, and it kind of had a bit of Stone Temple Pilots swagger to it and a bit of like, you know. And
it was the best of both worlds.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and his melodies, I just love Weiland's melodies. I think they're amazing. But like you said, with the second album, it just wasn't really, just didn't live up. I like the song they did for the Fantastic Four.
Wasn't that on Contraband?
I don't think so. It might have been. I thought it was just a separate.
I thought it was a between album. I thought it was a between.
It was just a separate.
No, it's on Contraband.
How is it? What's it called?
Yeah, it Set Me Free.
Set me free. Okay, cool. Okay.
Yeah, that's.
Are you saying, Drew, we should have done that one? Because it's a bit
late. I don't know. It was no, nice. You know what? It was really cool playing. It was really cool playing it, like going back over again. I know I only did sort of the lead parts in a couple of sections, but it was just fun to kind. I actually had to, because I hadn't played that in so long.
I had to
go on YouTube. Yeah, I went on YouTube and there were some tutorials. And I was like, oh shit, there's
I've been playing it wrong this entire time. Whoops.
Yeah, basically. And I was like, oh, this song's really easy. And actually doing it, and the stuff Slash does in the chorus, because the chord changes, he does different variations of it. I'm like, oh, okay. shit.
Like, that kind of blew my mind too. I'm just like, yeah. I just would just play the riff over and over again.
Yeah,
I didn't do it.
No, it's not that, because the chord cover changes bands. And you have to go around the chord structure, and it's like,
yeah,
wow, good old Slash. Again, yeah. Like, I'm not a massive Slash. I know you are, but like,
yeah.
I'm a huge fan of his tone, but I totally respect, like, every time I listen to Appetite or something like that, I just, well, I haven't listened to it in ages, but
he's known for like that. Yeah, he's known for that, just like straight blues rock. But like, if you really listen, man, like he's putting a lot of like thought into it. He's following the chord changes.
Okay,
he's not just looking for things. He's not just playing the same blues licks over and over.
Okay, I'm not a huge Slash fan, but I have a favorite Slash solo.
Okay, what is it?
What's yours? Tell me what yours is.
Oof. I think for me, it would probably have to be in Jules. You'll like this. It's like the end of Night Train.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to go totally out there. Give In to Me, Michael Jackson. He totally, absolutely, when you listen to it,
yes, absolutely,
rinses it. Goes off at the end. And he just goes, he just does this legato run all the way up. And you're just going,
yep.
Okay, yep. I'll give him that.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that. Actually, I'm gonna go after this,
mate. Honestly, listen to it. It is only it's... because I watched that really bad Finding Neverland documentary.
I mean, how much bigger of a gold? I mean, that's the whole reason why I got this bad.
Have you got the El Nicos in them?
No.
Ah, okay.
It's just stock.
I'm not Les Paul. I can't.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Was that tune from Dangerous?
Yeah, man. It was like...
That was a great album.
Mate, I've got it on vinyl. Yeah. I listen to it all the time because it's just an amazing record.
Yeah.
But the he obviously... It was like with Van Halen. He took... who's the best guitarist in 1991? Oh, Slash. You know, right. And actually that video's got like an awesome band. It's got like the bass player from Living Colour. And right. That's true. Slash. I
forgot about
and
that.
I can't remember the drummer, isn't it? But it's like got a wicked lineup.
Is it?
I don't know if it's Wimbish. It might be Wimbish. I don't know. But it might... No, because Wimbish isn't the original bass player from Living Colour. It's someone else. But the solo... Listen, yeah, sorry, going back to the solo.
Yeah,
listen to that outro. All that outro stuff he's doing on it. And it's just like...
Yeah, that
stuff drops out and he's just... And you're like, all right, cool.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Like,
and he
just,
did a solo. He did a solo on Alice Cooper record as well.
Yes, he did. I forgot the name of it.
Satch and Vi did it as well. Like, I can't remember what it's called now. But again, like some of those guest solos he's done. Mm-hmm. And, okay, sorry, another rant as well. I really like Slash and Miles Kennedy.
Oh, dude. I just rediscovered that. I went to go see Slash and Miles Kennedy in August of 2010.
Yeah.
When he first released that solo album, he was going on that first tour.
Yeah.
And Jules, I was telling you about this. It's like that version of that band, or that version of Slash, is probably at his peak, in my opinion.
I think some of his best playing has come from now. It's now. Yeah. It's like...
Because, like, he just put out the solo record, and
yeah.
GNR hasn't gone back together yet. Velvet Revolver blew up, and, you know, disassembled itself. So he had something to prove.
Mm.
So, like, he was playing with a fire that it's just like, I remember watching him do the Godfather solo, and I'm just like, what is happening?
Yeah,
this is amazing.
Well, because he's sober and he's just absolutely nailing it. That's
going
why.
Nuts.
Like, you know, and he's, I like the last album they did, the Slash Mark Kennedy one.
Yeah.
It's really good. But, I listened to it on my headphones. I'm like, this is great. Like, this has got some great songs. Mm. Like, and as Guns N' Roses like had great, everyone goes on about his playing, but just great songs.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know,
they're all brilliant writers too.
Yeah, it's like it's what it comes down to. You know,
listen, guys, I think I hate to be the one to say.
Have we spoken about it enough?
And then here comes the exit music. Get off stage.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm not saying we're Justin Bieber, but you know, it's getting late. No, sorry, guys. I've got to edit this.
Before we start talking,
there was, I gave this like brief, like, look, listen, guys, let's try and keep this to 20 minutes. We're at 42 and I actually, we're probably close to 45 because I didn't actually start the timer, but like the time just disappears. But one of the things I would say is like, I think the connection you make with people when you perform music together, when you record things together, I think it's like, it's the first time all four of us have sat down and had a conversation as four people, and it really has felt like, you know what I mean, like we've met each other
it's
many times.
It's felt
before.
Like we've known each other for a while.
Yeah, totally. It's great. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, now we have now we have friends in the United Kingdom.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So you need to come over.
Friends of San Diego.
Come over to the UK, play, go on a tour. It'd be amazing. You know,
we'll come over to the States. We'll tour.
Target on Facebook ads. We'll do this. Bang.
Yeah, I'm so down.
Sell out the whiskey. Let's go. Yeah.
That's hard to do.
That's very hard to do.
They're opening up, though. LA is in the orange tier, which basically means that they can have crowds of 50%. Yeah. So
I might be in LA next year because there's two things. I want to come and see that Motley tour, the Motley Def Leppard tour.
Oh, yeah. The Poison, Joan Jett. Def Leppard.
Yeah, and next year it was 20 years since I did that when I lived there. So for a bit. So my wife was like, oh, let's go to America, do a road trip. I was like, yeah, let's do that.
It's like, goes, yeah, let's
I
go.
Like, I was like, yeah, bro, let's do it. You know? I was like, let's go to LA and rent like a Winnebago and just cruise up and down, or rent a Mustang and just cruise up and down
there. There
you go. Coast Highway. And I was like, yeah. And go to In-N-Out Burger just all the time.
I was about to say, isn't a California trip if you don't go In-N-Out?
Ah, mate, In-N-Out. It's all about In-N-Out Burger. It's great. Love it.
Oh, yeah.
they keep threatening to open in the UK.
Do they? I'm surprised they never have.
I don't know why they haven't. It's weird.
It's huge. Like, yeah.
I think the furthest east they've gone in the United States is Colorado.
Oh, really? Close.
We've only just what have we got now, American wise? I tell you what we have now. What's that Canadian brand that's just opened over? Tim Hortons.
Yeah, that's open.
The coffee shop.
Yeah, that's just opened up over here now, in a couple of places. I like it. Timbits.
Trying to think. We kicked out Chick-fil-A. That was pretty. We've never had a Wendy's.
Never,
3 weeks. Told them to fuck off.
Never had a Wendy's. We don't have Wendy's.
No, we used to have Wendy's, but they went bankrupt.
Really?
Popeyes came and went in the early 90s. But like we've got Five Guys.
Subway.
Five Guys.
Subway. Yeah, Subway. Five Guys is amazing.
I love what Subway. About Taco Bell?
Like, well, expensive.
Stop.
Over
I'll tell you
Stop
what, Taco Bell, I think we only have a handful, but one of them is really near my house. So I think...
<What? laughs> <Lord, laughs> it's horrible.
San Diego's like... Yeah. What up?
It's McDonald's, isn't it? It's owned by McDonald's.
No, you're thinking of Chipotle. Chipotle's owned by McDonald's.
Close enough.
As soon as I go to LA, I'm having a breakfast burrito, and that's the end of it.
we live in Southern California. We have the best Mexican food. So anytime someone says Taco Bell, I'm just like, no.
No.
Stop it.
Yeah. Stop. Yeah.
We're cutting that off.
That's like your drunk food. Like over here, we have.
I wouldn't even go there for
in America. In America,
yeah, you're not going to be happy the next morning. Ugh.
Yeah. Anyway, guys,
right.
It was
recall
awesome.
Day.
Yeah, it was really awesome to talk to you guys. Let's hopefully everyone is going to really dig this track. I mean, we've been dropping little hints on stories, and I think literally as we were talking, we did the Wednesday Whittle. We had Drew's cake.
Yeah, I saw that.
My
earlier,
phone's
yeah.
just been going bing, 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 bing. So hopefully people are going
to
be hungry.
I've had to turn
hungry.
Off notifications on my phone for that.
Yeah. So hopefully, people will be hungry for the track. Hopefully, it will be coming out soon. And let's stay in touch. And maybe one day we can get on the stage together and rock out.
That would be fun.
Hopefully. That would be amazing.
For sure.
All right.
Good stuff, guys. Right, I'm going to go for a
rock on.
Nice.
All right.
Cool. Bye. Catch you later. Bye.
Great talking with you guys.